sabrosura, papi, que que.
Hello, everyone. This is Bum, the Café con Bum, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 355 of Café con Bum. Today, we have a conversation with Siria Gutierrez. Siria is a high-performance leadership coach and mental health advocate. She guides lawyers, doctors, and small business owners to transition from overwhelm to doing meaningful work aligned with their values, allowing them to enjoy life beyond their laptops. She's a first-gen professional from Guatemala and Nicaragua, and she earned her BA from UCLA and her JD from William S. Boyd School of Law at UNLV. Siria knows lawyering is a skill set, not an identity, and that to be a good lawyer, you must be a healthy person. Siria is also a founder of the Huellas Mentorship, an award-winning four-tier mentorship program, former Nevada Latino Bar Association president, and was named one of the top lawyers under 40 by the Hispanic National Bar Association in 2021. She also serves as faculty for Sari de la Motte's National Plaintiffs Trial Consulting Group, From Hostage to Hero, providing trial skills and mindset coaching to her peers. Siria enjoys watercolor art, live theater, writing fiction and poetry, and being a content creator. Listeners, this episode with Siria was actually lots of fun. She is great. I really enjoyed our conversation. We had some technical difficulties in the beginning, and she was just smooth sailing, did not get bothered. And I share this because there are guests that do get annoyed. And I've had people legit be like, "Do you want me to come back another day?" And Siria was not at all like that. She was super chill, and we talked about so much. Of course, almost went over time. We have so much more to talk about, so maybe we can bring her back. But I really think through her story, you'll find that you can do and you can be well at the same time. I think we're not living in the times where we are pushed to accomplish and succeed all the time. We're more in the times of let's live, let's enjoy this world that we live in, because many people can't. And so here is my talk with Siria Gutierrez. Siria, welcome to Café con Bam.
Thank you for having me, Pam.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. So the first question that we always ask is, what is your heritage?
My heritage, soy de Guatemala y Nicaragua. It is super important to me that both of those be included. I grew up in California, and for the longest time, I didn't really accept my Nicaragüense side, even though in hindsight, it's the most prominent part of me.
Oh!
I would always claim Guatemala. I'd be like, Guatemala, Guatemala, Guatemala. And in the last couple of years, I've been on a spiritual journey, and I realized, you know what? I have to claim Nicaragua, because Nicaragua is a big part. So it's soy de Guatemala. Y de Nicaragua.
¿Y por qué you didn't claim Nicaragua? What happened there?
So, you know, we can get into it now. Like, I got some daddy issues. And my dad is from Nicaragua. And his whole family is from Nicaragua. And they're the reason that we're here in the United States, really, is, you know, the revolution was going on and all that stuff. But I felt like claiming him was claiming a lot of the negativity that I grew up around. I grew up with a lot of domestic violence in the household. He was very angry and volatile. And so I think there was a part of me that wanted to distance that and really align myself with my mom. And with that, like, you know, I would go to Guatemala. We have more family in Guatemala. All of our Nicaragüense people are throughout the U.S., but they were mostly in California. And so there was just something about claiming him and like really accepting that I am of him that was really hard for me to do until I found Mother Aya. And, you know, that's a whole other story. So,
wow. So, and your parents were together or not?
Girl, they're still together. That's the most toxic relationship I have ever seen. And I, at this point, you know, 40 years being on Earth, I'm like, I've released any responsibility. You guys have your own journey, and if you guys want to do that, great. I do not. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we were talking before we started recording that I'm going through a divorce. And part of that is seeing that I don't want to be in that kind of relationship that doesn't fulfill me, that doesn't bring out the best in me, because I see what it does. And I've seen it firsthand, and I don't want to play that game. So I just don't. And I didn't.
So many questions. Like, there's so many layers there.
I'm very layered. Girl, go.
What's fascinating is that your dad was still at home. Like, you grew up with both of them and still claimed Guatemala over Nicaragua. Did you ever have a conversation around it, or were you ever challenged by your dad or his family of, like...
Not really. Like, that's a really interesting question. No, no, I don't think anybody really knew that that's what I was doing. But when I was applying for college and doing my personal statements and doing all that kind of stuff, I always leaned heavily on the Guatemala side. And I mean, I was born in Guatemala. I was raised in the U.S., but I came as a baby. And so really, like, I really have three countries. I've been thinking about this a lot. It's like, I have Guatemala, Nicaragua, and the U.S. But the U.S. has been predominantly where I've spent, you know, all of my life, but I have more ties to Guatemala. So nobody's ever really challenged it. I'd be curious to see if my mom will have an issue with it, because I'm being more public about making sure that even Nicaragua, because it really is a statement of, I think I was always meant to be a daddy's girl, and I didn't get that experience. And there's layers in that too, but it really is that self-acceptance. Like, why was I denying that for so long? Many, many reasons. But at the end of the day, the reality is Nicaragua and Nicaraguense influences. We would be with that family growing up, especially in my formative years. The foods, the tastes, all of these things were really more Nicaragua than they ever were Guatemala. And I'm like, oh, you know, I actually need to get to know my Guatemala side more. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on it.
And so which I was thinking also on the flip side, given that you've claimed Guatemala for so long and now claiming both, does that create some friction around, like, oh, all of a sudden, you know, like, ahora sí?
No, because I'm still like, you know, I'm from Central America. So I grew up in San Jose, and growing up in certain parts of the U.S., I imagine people have a similar experience where everybody would just assume I'm Mexican. Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, no soy mexicana. Like, nothing, no shade to that. But like, it was like, you know, it was the ignorance.
Sí, claro. You need the difference.
You need the difference. And I would get on my soapbox, especially when I was a teenager, and be like, there's more than 20 countries that speak Spanish. Like, you know, it triggered me, like, just to have that. And so I've always claimed Central America because I want the visibility of it. So I don't know that it's going to be that different for me, but I am cognizant of just making sure that it doesn't look like it's just one place. But I'll tell you what, I just got this Quetzal tattoo.
Ooh.
About 2 weeks ago. My brother is a talented tattoo artist.
You got it from your brother?
I got it from my brother. And it was cool, but it's, you know, it clearly, really, like, cool. It's Guatemala, but at the same time, for me, it's more of that connection to my indigenous roots. Mm-hmm. And that time period didn't have borders, right? So it really is just claiming that area. I had a chance to go to Chichen Itza last year and the Yucatan, and I fell in love with that part of Mexico. And I'm just like, you know, telling my mom about this. She's like, you know, that used to be part of Guatemala, right? I was like, no, like, how would I know that? How would I know anything about the history of Central America? We don't get taught any of that. And I learned very little of it in college. So like, no, mom, how would I know that? Did you tell me? No. So,
yeah. And I mean, it's also, I grew up in Mexico City, and I got to go to high school in LA, and I noticed there was a lot of rivalry between Central Americans and Mexicans all the time. And I didn't understand it because I was like legit a foreigner, because I was like, wait, but we're all brown and we all speak Spanish. Like, why is this, like, why do you not like them because they're from El Salvador? And, like, you know, so there was always, that was always interesting to me. And given that you grew up in California, I don't know if you, like, also there was that I think it's less of it now. I think now millennials, we've literally been like, let's stop this BS. Mm-hmm. Because like we're really, we have a shared history. Like all of our lands were stolen at some point. Like we stole from each other, you know, yes. And, you know, while different, the experience is similar. And so I think we've kind of like broken those rivalries that we have. Like I love like Central American food. Like give me some, all of it, all day, you know? And so I wonder if like you're resonant with that.
Absolutely. I think that there was a lot of basically like tribalism. And then also having this part of, all right, soy Latina, hablo español. It's my first language. But I was out of ESL classes by the time I was in second grade. And it was, you know, and then we moved schools. And then I wasn't in any of those classes. So it was also like, soy más gringa. At times. Claro. So then it's like, okay, you're trying to fit in, you're trying to figure out where do you belong, but that tribalism is definitely there for all of us. But what's really interesting is people just assume that I'm Mexican because again, I'm in the Southwest, I live in Las Vegas.
Well, and Mexicans, there's so many of us.
Right, there's so many of us. And no shit, like there's a reason that like, you know, we're there and people like us. But there's something about when my clients have seen me or I'm speaking and students realize that I'm from Guatemala, Nicaragua, they go crazy. They just love it so much because they're like, I think there's less people from other parts of Latin America that are, you know, quote unquote, making it. And so I also make it a point to own it. Right. Because it is a point of pride that maybe I don't have for myself. I don't have that part of my ego like, oh, yeah, I've got this. But I know it does something for other people. So if it makes them happy and, you know, them knowing it, like I'm here for it.
Totally. And I think models are important. And so seeing someone because 100%, like one thing is saying like I'm a Latina and we shared a similar experience, but a different thing is saying my mom is from Guatemala and you are from Guatemala. So we have even a much deeper connection. So I agree. It's important. Mm-hmm. Totally.
And it helps. It does something for people and it gives you that additional layer of connection. And mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I see you. And oh, wow, like you're doing this thing and you're helping me out with, you know, whatever it is that I'm helping out in at the moment. Mostly it's been in the legal cases when I was representing people. And even when I'm speaking, just I was doing reading week here in Nevada last month, in the month of March, and the kids don't have Latino teachers. And so I was there and I was like, well, do you have a bilingual book? They're like, absolutely. And like, they went crazy. And then they wanted to know, they're like, okay, so you're Mexican. I was like, actually, I'm from Guatemala, Nicaragua. And like, at least like three little kids just like jumped up and went crazy. They're just like, yeah. And it's like, but they were all just so excited about it. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to deny that to people. Cause I mean, it's a fact. It is what it is. So it does give that deeper layer of connection. And like you said, modeling.
So you mentioned representing cases. Why lawyer? Why did you become a lawyer?
Oh, gosh. I became a lawyer because if I'm being really honest, it was my second career choice. Like after you get past like all the little kid things, being a lawyer was second choice. My papi, we had a family dinner once and we didn't really have family dinners. That wasn't something that we did a lot because my parents have always worked in the food industry and, you know, we're delivering pizzas. I've delivered pizzas. I delivered pizzas in law school and it was rare for all of us to be home during those time periods. But this time we were, and my dad also, in addition to being really volatile and violent at the time, wasn't interested in education. Like he was educated in Nicaragua and in Guatemala, but he was very hands-off. I think it was a reflection of how he had been parented that he was like, I'm not interested. But this time during the dinner, he asked me, he's like, well, what do you plan on studying in college? And I said, psychology. And when I tell you, Pam, I got the worst verbal lashing of my entire life because I said that. And he told me that I was going to essentially like starve to death. And I'm giving you the Cliff Notes version. It was such an impression on me. And I was like, well, I guess I can't be a psychologist. I was 15. Like I had no clue, or, you know, I have no real reason that I can think of other than I was 15 and my dad was, you know, flipped out on me.
Wow.
And so I started looking at other career choices, and I was working at the time, and I was working at the same pizza place my parents were at. And I started reading the newspaper, and I really gravitated towards the crime section because, I mean, it's the crime section. There's a reason crime podcasts and Netflix right. are so popular, right? And I was looking at it, and there was so much violence against women and girls. And I just thought to myself, I am going to do that. And I set my target to become an attorney. Mind you, I didn't know a single lawyer. I didn't meet my first lawyer until my first week of law school. I didn't know about prep courses or else. I'm the least likely person to become an attorney. But here I am 14 years later. And I've been practicing in the state of California and Nevada. And at this point, I'm actually at the end of that chapter. But it's been a very lovely chapter. So yeah, that's why I became a lawyer. Was, you know, psychology wasn't an option in my, you know, teenage mind anymore.
Do you have any mentors? Because going to law school is not like, you know, like you have to take a lot, like you said, like prep stuff, and like you figure out the law schools, and like, it's not just like hop on a bus and get there.
It's not. So the question is, did I have any mentors? The answer is not really. I had one person. So I barely graduated high school because of all of the things that were happening at my house. And just, I was looking for reasons not to be at the house. And I was a salty teenager. My friends will tell you. My parents will probably tell you too. But, you know, I had reasons for it, right? And when I graduated, I realized, well, I have to go to college. My mom had always told me since I was little, you have to go to college. You have to. And I knew it was something there, but I didn't really have the pathway there. And nobody had really invested in me in high school. Nobody had really pointed out that, well, you're a really talented writer, or, hey, you know, you should be doing, like, nobody was orienting me in any way, shape, or form. So I ended up signing up for junior college. And I realized very quickly, this is expensive. Like, my tip money is not going to make it here. And even though I was applying for FAFSA, doing those things. So I found a program through the community college called EOPS. It's Equal Opportunity something something in the California higher ed system. And basically they offered free book vouchers if you, you know, played their game and did what you needed to do. And I was like, I will take free
done.
Money. Done. Yeah, exactly. But that's where I met my first mentor, but it was very short lived. And so Pablo Ortega at West Valley College, hey, he's up in Northern California now, even further up. But he saw something in me. He was the first person to see things, and he looked at my grades and he's like, Cedia, we need to get you on the honors program. I was like, me? Honors? What? He's like, yeah. And he picked up the phone right away and called up the director of the honors program. I was like, I'm sending you a student right now. She needs to be in your program. And I was like, okay, here's somebody who saw that I was bright, who saw that I could be whatever it was that I wanted to be. And God, I'm going to get emotional. There was just something so beautiful about having this person see what I couldn't see. And I don't know how he saw it. Other than I was open and willing to be guided. And with his help, I was able to transfer to UCLA. And he wrote me a letter of recommendation for law school. Like, I figured out some stuff along the way. But he was the first person that gave me that initial foundation and push. And it was funny, I was reading, I'm applying to graduate programs right now. So I was reading through some old letters of recommendations, and I saw his, and I forgot that the first keynote I did, he set it up for me. I did a keynote for the EOPS program dinner, and I'd forgotten. And I was like, oh my God, like that was a full on keynote. Like, I spoke at that, and I had to be like 19 at the time. Wow. And I've been holding myself out professionally as a public speaker for the last 2 years. But I was like, wait, I was keynoting like when I was barely out of high school.
Way back when. Yeah.
And I forgot. And I was like, oh man, like it was just, it's such a cool thing to remember that person. And every couple of years I will send them an email, an update. I'll track them down. I'll use my FBI skills, right? Be like, where's Pablo now? And I'll just give him a life update. And it's just, he may not be an active mentor who's, you know, helping me with all of these other things, but his advice in that period of time of having him just really challenge me with always asking me like, why not? I'd be like, you know, I want to do this. He's like, okay, we'll go do it. And I'm like, well, are you sure? He's like, well, why not? And like, that was just his mantra over and over again. And I really internalized that. And now that's, Why not? I'm like, all right, I'm going to try it out. Why not? Usually you can't come up with an answer is what I found anyways.
I love that. And I think that's the power of when people are seen, you know, like just someone seeing you and seeing what you're capable of. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they see more than what we are like, I wouldn't say capable of seeing, but more than we give ourselves permission. Because when we don't have models, like you didn't know a lawyer, so, you know, mm-hmm. there was nothing to look up to because you didn't know what you didn't know, you know, and he got to see that potential and like push you to it. That's awesome.
But yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
And did you ever, as you were navigating all of this, feel like this wasn't for you? Like, did you ever feel not enough?
I definitely felt not enough throughout most of the process. And I think what's really interesting is when I walked into law school and I met that first lawyer, you know, you go in there and I'd already had an experience with getting actually into that honors program where I looked around and I was like, where are the brown people? Like there were not any people of color really in my honors program. I think there was like two or three of us. And I ended up writing a piece on it in the school paper at the time. I was just playing around with some journalism. And when I got to law school, it was a similar experience. There were very few of us. And in undergrad, I'd actually avoided La Raza. I'd avoided a lot of the Latino groups because I didn't want to, in my mind at the time, I didn't want to give my future self any problems because I thought at the time, you know, I'm going to be a lawyer, I'm going to be a DA, and I'm going to be a judge one day. That's what I thought the path was. And so I didn't want to do anything controversial in my head. And so I stayed away from a lot of the, you know, I know that there's like a Latina sorority, and my best friend ended up graduating from Chicano Studies. Like, it wasn't like there weren't brown people at UCLA. Like, it's a huge ass campus, right? But I avoided some of those things. But when I got to law school, it was just another siloed place where it was predominantly white people and kids who, you know, at the time could spend $100 on jeans. And I was like, I would never spend $100 on jeans. Like, I would never. Now is a different story. But, you know, it took time to get into some of these spaces. So feeling like I wasn't enough was a big part of it. And I ended up joining the Latino group for the first time ever.
Wow.
Yeah. So I joined La Voz at the William S. Boyd School of Law. And the first class that we had, or the first, not class, the get together, the president, she stands up there and she starts talking about a mentorship program. And she goes, you know, there's a mentorship program that we're going to launch this year. It's a 4-tier mentorship program. It's going to take a lawyer, a law student, an undergrad student, and a high school student. And they're going to make this mentoring team so we can increase the pipeline of Latinos into the profession. And I could not raise my hand fast enough. I was so in. I was like, I absolutely need to be a part of this because the struggle to get here, if I can give anybody that information and make it a little bit easier, I'm in. What do I do? And that mentorship program is now called WAYS. We didn't name it at the beginning. One of my best friends gets naming credit for that, Karina Pandeli Rocha. And she came in one day and was like, this thing needs a name. Let's give it a name. So she called it WAYS, and we're all like, done. That sounds great. And it's still going on. And they've actually expanded it to Northern Nevada. And I don't know how many students have gone through the program. But at this point, I think they have over 200 mentoring people in there. So all the different levels. Wow. Who are giving back and giving that information. And that's annually for the last... This started in 2007, and it was just wild to me that something that you can start, even at that level, right? Like, we were students, we didn't have money, we didn't have, like, knowledge, we didn't have connections, that it's still going and growing, and, you know, it's been recognized several times by the Hispanic National Bar Association. It is so neat. So I took that not enoughness part there and channeled it into what can I do to help other people. And that mentorship program it's so cool to be one of the founding members of that.
For sure. I love that, how you were able to flip the not enoughness to like plenty, you know, just like, let's just make happen, not only just for me, but also for the rest of the people that come behind. That's awesome.
Thank you.
So once you're in, actually, let's take a quick coffee break. This is a good time for that. Okay. Sidia, do you drink coffee?
I have tea. I drink one cup of coffee a day, and then the rest of the time I'm doing tea.
Nice. What's your morning brew? Do you drink your coffee in the morning?
Yes. Yes, it is absolutely the first thing I drink. That and water.
Nice. How do you brew your coffee?
I do a single pour coffee every morning. So I just, you know, it's only me. I, you know, put it in my little ceramic single pour thing and pick out whatever favorite mug that is that day and, you know, fill it up and make some tea at the same time and, you know, drink both, you know.
Nice.
Double fisting it.
Tea and coffee?
Yeah, tea and coffee, all of it. So
nice. And do you drink your coffee black?
You know, I've tried that, and it's an acquired taste, and I don't yes. have it. I am very much addicted to sugar, and I know it's a bad thing, but I'm like, you know what? I'm just not going to fight it. So I definitely am using way too much creamer, but it's okay. I'm okay with it.
So you do cream and sugar or the sweetened cream?
I just do like a sweetened creamed, and then when I go to Starbucks, I will get the nitro cold brew with vanilla sweet cream. And I learned how to make a sweet cream at home because I befriended one of the baristas. I was like, hey, how do you do that? Oh. And so then for a while there, I was like, I have my own sweet cream at home. But it, like, that's too much power. That's too much sweet cream to have on my own. I needed the restriction that they had there. So, yeah, my cafecito needs to look like, you know, café con leche. It needs to look a certain color, which is, you know, just a little bit creamier. That's it.
Light brown.
Yeah.
Nice. On my end, we're recording this afternoon, so I'm drinking water at the moment. I also recently moved. You recently moved. We can talk about that, like the intricacies of that. Mm-hmm. But the first thing I set up, though, in the kitchen, we're still going through the kitchen. I mean, I moved yesterday, but the first thing – 2 days ago, actually. Mm-hmm. This is our second night here. The first thing that we set up was a coffee.
Nice.
The coffee maker needed to be done and set up. And so this morning I had my usual 4-Sigmatic mushroom coffee.
How do you like that? I've heard a lot about the mushroom coffees.
Okay. I have ADHD, and so I do need, like, the extra – adaptogenics, they do help my brain. Mm-hmm. I've drank 4-Sigmatic for a few years now, and 4-Sigmatic was the first mushroom coffee that I tried. I loved it. I actually for a while stopped drinking coffee because I would get super jittery. And so my traditional Chinese medicine, no, that was an Ayurvedic doctor actually. So this Ayurvedic doctor was like, well, it's because you have to figure out the coffee and where it's grown because it's like the soil and like there's also like different pollutants and ¿cómo se llama el? The pesticides and whatever. And so he was like, it may not be the coffee that's affecting you. It may be like all the other factors around the coffee. Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So then I found mushroom coffee, 4-Sigmatic, been drinking it. It's great. I've tried other mushroom coffees, and they've not worked as well as 4-Sigmatic. And so I tried another one that rhymes with mice. Mm-hmm. and that one gave me anxiety. Oh, so, okay. Yeah. So that was, like, tricky. But... So 4-Sigmatic, I love it. I have a code, Stay Shining, and I keep drinking 4-Sigmatic not because I have an affiliate code, but because it's actually generally the only one that works for me.
I love that so much, and I'm going to check it out because I got an ADHD diagnosis last year, but with my trauma background, it's unclear. And so my therapist and my psychologist were like not agreeing, and I think my therapist is right because I definitely had some complications with the Adderall that I got put on. And but it is, you know, the trauma brain and the ADHD brain are very similar and they present very similar. And, you know, I tried to explain that to the psychologist and he's like, I will do my own assessment. I was like, okay, doc. But, you know, anyways, so I will
check. Especially in women. ADHD is really complicated in women because the majority of the studies have been done on men.
Exactly. Exactly. And so
it's hard. Makes sense. For sure. Yeah, Adderall, I also can't take Adderall, or like I was on Wellbutrin, which is it's actually, that one's a antidepressant, but that one gave me anxiety.
See, and you got to find the stuff that works for you, right? And figuring that out. And I think a big thing that's worked for me is certainly meditation and getting more connected to myself. But I'll tell you, with just the coffee in general, I drink a lot of coffee going to law school and studying for the bar exam. And I was giving myself withdrawal headaches. And so I'm going through a divorce right now. And so my former partner, he didn't like the smell of coffee. So when we moved in together, I stopped making coffee at home. Yeah. No, he was just like, girl, he didn't swear. He didn't do anything. I want to say remotely fun. That's not fair. He was very clean cut. He's very like, you know, I would joke around that I was his only vice, and it was true. But like, he noticed in me that I would get these headaches on the weekend, and they were caffeine withdrawal headaches. And he's like, don't you think that maybe it's not a good thing if it's affecting your body this way? And I sat with that for a bit. And so I started reducing my caffeine intake down to one. And then we both got like this huge stomach bug. And we were out for days. And then I was off of coffee for days and I didn't have the headache. And I was like, I'm going to keep this going. So I ended up, at the time I started learning about tea. So I drink like a lot of loose leaf tea. I have a couple favorite tea shops in San Francisco that I like to go to. I know it sounds super bougie. but like I love it. And I stopped drinking coffee for like 7 or 8 years. And then my bestie was like, oh my God, you have to try this nitro. And I did. And it reminded me of like cafecito I used to have with my mom when I was a little girl. And instantly it was like, put it straight into my veins. I just want it. You know, it was just,
we're back hooked into it.
Oh yeah. And that's like, that's when I bought my single pour little ceramic thing. And he would still give me shit for it. And be like, oh, it smells so gross. It's like, well, you don't have to drink it. And that was like slowly like, allowing myself to enjoy things that I enjoy. It's like, I liked having coffee. I liked being able to go to Starbucks with my best friend once a week and shoot the shit. Like, you know, there was nothing wrong with it. And, you know, it was part of taking my power back for sure.
I love that. Coffee did it.
Yeah. Coffee was part of it for sure.
I love that. Let's get back to the show.
Yes. Sabrosura pa' ti
que quede. Okay, Sidia. So I love that you took your power back with drinking coffee again. That's a story. That's a whole speech.
Thank you.
So back to your story. So you go through law school. You start Huellas, join Levels. You've been top lawyers under 40 by Hispanic National Bar Association. You are also faculty. How did you decide your law, como se dice, your practice, like what kind of law you were going to practice?
You know, what was interesting is I did everything quote unquote right. I interned at the DA's office. I took the criminal justice classes. Like I was focused on, I'm going to be a DA and I'm going to get whatever skills I can to do that. And I was in line for it, but I graduated during the recession. I graduated in 2010. And I started working for a judge. And so working for a judge is a very prestigious thing to be able to accomplish. And so I had this dual docket. I was clerking for Judge Valerie Vega at the time. And I knew I had a job lined up. And, you know, that's what you wanted. You wanted to have a little bit of civil, a little bit of criminal experience. She had been a district attorney before me. I was going. Like, this is what was going to happen. And, you know, Nevada was the epicenter of the last recession and of the foreclosures that were happening.
Right.
And we had a hiring freeze at the county. So where I thought I was going next was like, we're not hiring. We're keeping our law clerks.
Just kidding.
Yeah. It was gone. And at the time I interviewed at the public defender's office, but there was some beef with my judge, and so I didn't get in there. I was like, wait a minute, soy Latina, hablo español, I want to do public service, and y'all don't want to hire me? Like, I was shocked. Like, I, this is going to sound a little bit egotistical, but I really don't get what I want. And I was like, I'm not going to do public service? Okay, well, girl needs to get a job, because I can't wait for the county to start hiring, because I would have been a shoo-in for a district attorney position. And I've really been thinking a lot about this period of my life too, with just all of the changes. I don't think I was meant to do it. And I looked for a job right away. I got swooped up in the private sector and was working for, I was outside counsel for Walmart as my first job.
Wow. How was that?
It was cool. I really enjoyed it, but that path of what I thought I was going to do didn't come to fruition. And I could have applied at different points. Obviously, the county started hiring again, and I had friends go into the DA's office. I have several really good friends that are chief deputy district attorneys that have moved up through the ranks, and, like, you know, they've done that stuff, and it's a good life. And I feel like had I done that, I wouldn't be doing all the other things that I'm doing now, because it would have been a good, fulfilling life. And there's no shade to that, but I don't think that's what the universe wanted me to really do. And so when I look at, you know, how those doors were closing, it was that redirection that sometimes people talk about. It's like, no, you're not meant to do this. It would be a good life, but not in this lifetime, not in this timeline. You're going to go do something else. And that's kind of how I've navigated. And to get where I'm at now, about halfway through my career, about 7-year itch, I started having panic attacks. And I realized, like, I wasn't fulfilled with the work I was doing.
But hold on, before we transition into that.
Yeah.
Like, I love that you're seeing it this way. Like, it wasn't for me. But as you're in it, when you're in it, were you like, dang, I really wanted to do this. And did you resent not being able to? Or were you like, how long did that take?
I was in survival mode. My law clerk job was the first job out of law school. I was making under $62,000 a year, but that alone was more money than my parents combined made in their taxes. So it was like a first big girl job, like that kind of thing. And I just knew that I didn't have time to sit there and pout about it. It was like, well, they're not hiring. I got to pay back my student loans. Like, I have a mortgage on my head, or I did. But that's where I was at the time. I was like, I don't have time to, like, sit here and wait. I don't have time. You know, my judge, she hired 2 years out. So I knew from the first year of law school that I had a job out when I was done. And that gave me, like, a really great sense of security and confidence. But, like, I was done. I had a 1-year term. My colleagues at the time, their terms were getting extended because of us being in the same situation. I didn't have that. I was like, well, damn, that didn't happen. I got to go get a job. And what's funny is that the hiring freeze was lifted within, like, the first 3 months of me being at this job. And I looked at it and I was like, well, that's just too bad, because I made a commitment to this place. And I think that there's something that happens. And I don't know if it's a first gen issue or, like, just the way that we're conditioned about work. But I was like, they waited for me. They waited months for me to be here. Like, I can't do that to them. Like, you know, how disloyal for me to be like, peace out, I'm going to the DA's office now, having been there only a couple months. You know, que malagradecida is right. Kind of like what I was thinking. So I just didn't do it. I was like, well, nope, that closed. That's done. I'm here at this firm. And I stayed at that firm for about 3 years. And what's interesting there is I was not taking care of myself. I was not taking care of myself at all. And I had 1 year where I had back pain every single day, every single morning. And my partner, he would, like, massage it. I would do heating pads and all this stuff. And I've now learned that sometimes pain and other things will manifest in your body because of emotional things that are happening. And I was super stressed out. I was like, the client was amazing, but my boss, she's legendary in the legal community in Las Vegas for being ruthless. And, like, she was really no different to opposing counsel than she was to her staff. And the minute, I kid you not, Pam, the minute I decided I'm done, I'm looking for another job, that back pain went away.
Oh, I love that. I'm an EFT practitioner. I don't know if you've heard of EFT tapping.
I have.
And so 100% in EFT, we talk about how the body holds the emotions and how I'm not going to repeat what you said because that would just be redundant. But yes, mm-hmm. your back pain was totally that pressure and the stress of the work. That's wild.
It's 100% that. And it's like, and as I progressed through my career, what I've realized is, and just life, not just my career, is my body talks to me a whole lot more when I'm listening. And when I'm not listening, it'll stop me. It'll slow me down. I get foot injuries quite a bit. And it's like, all right, I got to slow down. Like, I sprained my ankle in water more so than I think anybody should. Because I'm like, it was water. How did I do that? But yeah. I'm very talented.
And the other thing that I want to ask you is you mentioned how you made under $60,000 more than both your parents combined in their taxes. And did that ever feel, because I do work with clients, like that is a ceiling. That is something especially for, that is very prominent with first gens when we get into a place of making more money, or like we get to like, this is the most amount of money my parents have ever made. It's also a body, like it could put us into freeze mode. Did that happen to you?
It put me in, I wouldn't say it put me into a freeze mode, but it definitely put me into a mindset of like, oh, I kind of made it. But I also realized I didn't have the skill set to handle making money because my parents didn't have that. And I was so deficient on it that there were times where I finally got frustrated with myself because I was living paycheck to paycheck and I was an attorney. And it's like, because I didn't know the skills. And one of the things that really attracted me to my former partner was we went shopping for shoes. And I remember him just like picking them out, not really caring about the price. He ended up buying two pairs. And I'd never seen anybody do that. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to feel like I'm not worried about it. Like, you know, I'm not saying my dad has committed fraud against certain stores, but he has changed the price tag sometimes. Like, you know, the things when you're looking at, like,
because the price matters.
Yeah, because the price really mattered, and it was such a big deal. And so then finally, I had someone who understood money, and I was really fortunate. One of the gifts of that relationship was learning how to handle money. And he showed me. And the first thing we did, he's like, all right, let's do a rainy day fund. I was like, a rainy who, what? What are you talking about? He's like, you don't know what a rainy day fund is? I was like, no. And he was my teacher in the financial space. And then I was, you know, I remember finally getting to a place early in my career where I forgot that it was payday. And I made the mistake of saying that out loud. And my paralegal at the time was like, well, that must be nice. And I just like, you know, it just slipped my mind because I'd finally gotten a handle of what it meant to just make a little bit more and, you know, how to manage yourself in that time space. So, you know, I don't tell people that. So please don't hate me, people, for sometimes forgetting that it's payday. I know now because I'm a business owner and I have to run payroll. And if I forget payday, people are going to get mad, you know.
Right. But, like, but now you make you run the payroll.
Now I run the payroll, so yeah.
So you have to remember
payment. I have to remember it, yeah. I have to pay myself, you know?
Right. Totally. So, okay, so to move into the transition, that's when you get the itch and you're like, wait a minute, I've been doing this. And then how do we get to what you do now?
So really it started with panic attacks. So I started having panic attacks in 2017. I'd switched to a different firm by then. And I realized right away it wasn't the right fit for me. And it was, again, going back to the body. Like, my body knew. And my body got me to listen through panic attacks. And then I started going to therapy and really starting to understand the tools and the different things that I hadn't really processed from my childhood. And just continued to start doing that work on myself. And I remember I was like, I still had student loan debt, and one of my best friends and I were talking, and I was like, I really just, I'm so unfulfilled. I don't want to do this. And she gave me some advice that I give to plenty of people now, which is, before you break up with the law, why don't you try it in a different way? And she's like, you've invested a lot of time and money, like, just try something different. You have nothing to lose. And I was like, all right, that's fine. And sure enough, the universe sent in who would be my next boss. And she had been done defense work, and she transitioned to plaintiff's personal injury work, and she recruited me. And then I was happy. I was helping people. I was helping people instead of insurance companies. I was dealing with primarily Latino clients. I was using my language skills. I was tired by the end of the day just from talking in Spanish all day because I was translating these complicated concepts and trying to actually communicate them and doing it in a different language. And so it was good. But again, like that unsettling eventually came in, and I, you know, was still going to therapy. I was still working on myself. And as I progressed, I realized the things I was learning in therapy are not hard. And it pissed me off. It's like, why don't we teach this? Why is this like not out there? Why don't people know? Why did I have to social climb and, you know, have a certain status to be able to get access to these tools? This is ridiculous. And so that anger coupled with finding or reclaiming parts of myself, reclaiming my creativity, my time, having boundaries with, no, I'm not doing this for you anymore. Getting out of hustle culture, which the law definitely has, all of those things brought me to this place of, I'm a mental health advocate in the legal space primarily. The legal profession is very hard. It's very male dominated. We also have 22% higher suicidal ideations than the general population.
No way.
Yeah. In the last year and a half, in my community alone, we've lost 3 judges. And very recently, we lost a public defender to suicide. We also lost a government person recently for the city, also to suicide. And I've been there. I've had some really dark moments. And I finally had to have a paradigm shift of realizing that lawyering is a skill set. It is not my identity. It is what I do to make money sometimes, because I do all kinds of stuff now. But it's not who I am. And once I was able to really step away from that, it's made it much easier for me to say, you know what, I think this chapter of doing it this way no longer serves me. And I can step into something else. But I got to tell you, Pam, it's hard because, you know, you go and you listen to the statistics. Latinos make up a very small portion of the legal landscape. We make up 5%. Of that 5%, 2% are Latinas. So I'm this very like minority within a minority. And so I've felt that pressure for so long of staying, because I know representation matters. I know modeling matters, but I've also gotten to a place in my life that I know that me being in that position gives so many people permission to also follow their fulfillment and follow what they're actually meant to do. I think I was meant to learn certain advocacy skills, learn certain things. I see how all of the systems work now, and now I can use that in a different way, and I don't have to be a traditional lawyer like I have been for the last 14 years.
That makes me think of what your friend said of, you don't have to break up with the law. You just have to do it a little bit different. And that's literally what you're doing, which is super cool.
And it's freeing. And I think the best part about where I'm at in life is I'm not doing anything other than being myself. And that's being loud, bright, funny. You know, I talk a lot about creativity and just being my full self. And it's just like, wait, when you show up as yourself in different spaces, other people get to do the same thing. And yes, it's such a cool ripple effect that, you know, you don't have to do anything. There's no effort in it. It's just like, I'm just showing up as myself. And I think the more I go into different spaces, the more cognizant I am. I just need to be me. I don't need to try to conform or try to look a certain way or do other things. I'm going to show up as me in every single space. And then, you know, you're not getting that, oh, well, this is Cydia when she shows up as a lawyer. I might show up a little bit different in a deposition because I need to, but it's still all of me showing up.
Yes, for sure. Because I think it's our generation that is kind of like challenging the previous generation, which are our parents, who were come from the time where you literally had a job and you worked there until you retired, and then you like could ponder, not even like embark on it, because like my mom doesn't have a retirement plan, but just think about like, oh, that's when I will do what I want. And I think our generation is challenging the fact that we don't just have to be one thing. And we are like, you do your watercolor and your live theater and fiction and writing and speaking and mental health advocacy and law. And it's all of the things that make you you. And then I think the generation that comes after us, they will totally be, you know, all the things, because that's how change happens. Like, we do a little bit and then the next person does a little bit more.
Yeah. And I think that if you are someone who only wants to do one thing, that's my former partner. He's a civil engineer and he loves what he does. And, you know, that was, I don't want to say a point of conflict, but he's like, if I die at my desk, like, I don't care. I was like, I care. I don't want you to die at your desk. But like, for him, it was just like, this is what he loves doing. And he didn't need all of the other things. I did. I really needed to stop trying to force myself into the specialist box, because I'm not. I love reading a wide variety of things. I love participating in different things. Every single day of my life is different. And I love that. That's how I show up as the best version of myself, is by allowing myself to have these options, allowing myself to, you know, go to the buffet of life. And what do I feel like doing today? You know, what do I have capacity for? What no longer serves me? What drains me? And honoring all of those things by really being in community with myself and all of my different parts, you know, my inner child, my angry teenager, let me tell you, she's loud and she loves poetry. But like all my young professional, all of these things, I finally feel like I'm the right developmental age for where I'm supposed to be. And it's a pretty cool feeling. Like 40 and fun is what it's all about. And I actually, soy la señora de las cuatro décadas, and I'm here for it.
Yes. Ooh, that's a great song.
It is.
I was talking to, so I have a space, it's called the Manis Pass. And so, because I called listeners, I call them Manis. And we were talking about that song the other day and how I used to listen to it because my mom would listen to it. And I'm like, oh, is that like, I'm not 40 yet, but I'm like, is that going to be like my song?
Oh, 100%. It is a timeless song, but also kind of knowing, like, it's such a beautiful song. And, you know, and Arjona is a paisano. He's from Guatemala.
Claro, es guatemalteco.
So it's like, all right. So we have all of that, but there's just, it's such a beautiful song. And I love that ownership of him just being like, you're beautiful exactly how you are. Like, stop trying to reclaim your youth or other things. Like, you have all of this experience. And, you know, he talks about, he talks about an orgasm in the song, right? Like Esquias and everything. And I'm just like, you know what? They're way better now than they were back then. So I'm good.
Yes.
Yeah, TMI, sorry.
No, it's all good. So Cydia, tell me about your book.
Have you ever had a work husband?
Oh, yes.
Yes. So this is the story of a work husband relationship, and it is erotica, and I will come out and just say nothing ever happened. This is all in my twisted mind, but it just basically follows the main character, and this, you know, they're going, the book's called The Retreat. It'll be available on Amazon KDP for sure. I'm going to self-publish this one, and it is a story that is the fantasy of what would have happened during a firm retreat. And it takes place in Park City, Utah. There's a lot of spiciness. I was rereading it the other day and I couldn't stop laughing because it's very like, it's very like romantic kind of language and things. If you're on Book Talk, like the Book Talk girlies are going to love it. And, you know, the main character is, her name's Mireia, and she's, you know, a little bit of an alter ego for sure.
Is she a lawyer?
She is a lawyer, and this happens to be her paralegal that she was definitely crushing on, and it's that story of, you know, what would happen if this actually happened. And what's funny is, remember I was telling you I have a tendency to injure myself, especially my feet. Yes. I was in Guatemala and I sprained my ankle really, really bad, and I was there, and this was literally February of 2020, so right before the pandemic happened. And I was laid up in a hammock, and I wrote this whole story in a hammock with a sprained ankle throughout Guatemala. And I was just, you know, because we were doing like an American road trip through the country. I wanted to see different things. I wanted to see them with my adult eyes. And, you know, my brother's over here driving the truck. My abuelita's in the back. You know, we're pulling over to get cervezas and drinking and all stuff. And I'm over here writing smut on my phone. It was hilarious.
So I'm thinking about your foot. So you recovered with your foot during the pandemic?
Yes.
So the book's coming out this summer. Tell us all the places and spaces where we can find you.
You can find me on Instagram and TikTok. Those are my favorite places to be in. I'm not just a lawyer _ Cedia. Those are the main spots that you can find me. I will definitely be promoting the book. The book is going under my pseudonym, and I want to be very clear about this. Kika Valencia is the pseudonym that I'm using. It is not because I'm ashamed of anything that I wrote. It's literally to just have brand clarity. And it's going to be published under my new company, Modern Messalina. And I'm really excited about it because it's a new venture and it's a hot book. The beta readers love it. And Mireia goes on a couple adventures. There are more books. That's been part of the delay because I'm trying to finish editing those. I have three.
So it's going to be a series of adventures?
Yeah, it's a series of adventures. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So it's not going to be directly under my name, Kika Valencia. And again, it's mostly because I just want to keep the brands clear. I'm in the mental health space. Mental health space is Cedia Gutierrez, and you're going to get all of that along with a lot of first-gen content. Kika Valencia, she's my spicy alter ego. So
yes. That's cool. I like that differentiator.
Yes.
Because as a former brand strategist, it makes a difference. So it is important.
That's what they keep telling me. So I'm going to go with the experts on this one. And, you know, it'll work. It'll work out. Thank you. Thank you.
For sure. For sure. That's so exciting. Cedia, well, thank you so much for coming to Café con Pam. We have a couple more questions left.
Yes.
Uno, what's your remedio? Do you have a remedio that you want to share with us?
Oh, you know what? I was thinking about that because I know you're like not doing all the regular ones that you normally do.
The ones that you think about.
Yes. Okay. Yes. My tres leches is it's a labor of love. And if I make you tres leches, I love you. That's just what it is. I haven't proposed exactly, but I make my Nicaragüense tres leches. It's very wet. It's very moist. And it is just, it's one of those things that I feel like it is me pouring myself into it because, again, it is a labor of love to make that cake. And it is the only recipe that I know from scratch. So you're also getting that in there. But I think tres leches is just... is one of those comfort foods that I love. And, you know, because of the calorie intake, I only make like once or twice a year. And if I'm making it outside the holidays, I definitely love you. So.
I love tres leches. So my partner's white. Mm-hmm. And the first time we've been together for 8 years. And the first time he had tres leches, I was like, dude, this is like my favorite type of cake. Like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for you to try it, blah, 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 blah. Y lo probó, and he was like, why did you give me soggy cake? And I'm like, blasphemy, like, this is such an offense.
I, you know, it's funny because my former partner was also a colonizer, and he did not like the tres leches.
Tres leches,
like,
tampoco?
No le gustaba. And I'm like, you know, you're the only person that doesn't like my tres leches. He also would not compliment my singing. And I was like, you know, offended by that too. I'm like, I have a good voice, sir. But like, so it was one of those funny things. But yeah, he didn't like it either. But what I do is I will order tres leches everywhere I go. If it's on the menu, I'm going to try it because I'm judging you. I will throw down. And the only tres leches that I was thoroughly impressed with was I was in Disney World. I was in Epcot, and they had a coconut tres leches, and it was divine. And I was like, this hits the spot. And my little brother and I were there, and he agreed too, and he backed me up. He's like, she's like a tres leches connoisseur, and we approved. The mouse got it right. So but but very few places I'm very judgy. For tres leches.
For sure. That for me is chilaquiles. I can't. You know Mexican chilaquiles?
Yes. That's a good one to judge restaurants.
Yeah. So I order... I stopped ordering chilaquiles because I don't want to get disappointed. Many more times than not, like 99% of the time, I would get disappointed with the chilaquiles. So I just stopped ordering them unless I'm in Mexico City. Because that's where I'm from. And so to me, like my favorite thing – it's not my favorite thing. But I really like chilaquiles. And I stopped ordering it because I'm like, you know, you're just going to mess it up. I'm not going to like – no.
I love chilaquiles. I've had really good chilaquiles in San Diego. So I've never disappointed there. But, you know, you're so close to the border. So I get it. But that's one of those staple dishes like, oh, tienen chilaquiles? All right, I'll try them.
I know. Let's see. And they'll probably not be good in my case. So what's your quote or mantra that you live by?
Oh, gosh. I have so many. But right now, the one that I needed the reminder of is from Winnie the Pooh. Mm. You're braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think. And I've had that quote reflected back to me several times, including that friend I talked about earlier who told me to, you know, before I break up with the law, to try it in a different way. And my former partner, you know, when things were good, like he would reflect that too. And I think even just tying it back to Pablo, like he knew, he saw these things in me that I didn't see before. And I really feel like that quote encompasses all of that, that sometimes we just need that reminder that we are braver. Like I think bravery is one of my highest qualities. I walked away from a 13 and a half year relationship that on paper and everything else like looked okay, but it wasn't the right thing. It's the same thing with my legal career. People are like, are you nuts? Like, you can't do that. I was like, sure I can. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I can, because I am braver than I think sometimes. And so I think it's a really good reminder.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And the last question, do you have a productivity tip, trick, or tool that you want to share with us?
Yes. So I'm a big fan of breathing. And I know it sounds cliche, but let me tell you about box breathing, because it is, it's so easy to do. And so basically it's a four count all the way around. And with your hand, you can make a visual box across your body. But really what you're doing is you're inhaling for four, you're holding for four counts, then you're exhaling for four, and then you're holding again. And then you repeat that over and over again. And what it does is it's easily accessible. It calms down your central nervous system. It's actually something that Navy SEALs are taught to do to lower their heart rate. And it's one of the things where I can do it anywhere. I've done it before depositions. I've done it before going to court, before speaking on stages. And I just love to box breathe. But I got to tell you, that's my tool. It is so important for people to figure out their own tools. Because I had a paralegal I worked with for years. She'd come in really frantic into my office and be like, CD, I have this problem. And it's like, all right, calm down. Just breathe. She's like, if you tell me to breathe one more time, I'm going to strangle you. I was like, I get it. And so I was like, what do you need? And she's like, I need to go listen to music to calm down. It's like, go listen to music in your car, come back. And, you know, I think that that's really the tool I would give to people, besides the tangible box breathing, is figure out what the things are that work for you. Because just because it works for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you. And that's okay. Try on the different tools and skills, and then really start building what is my personalized toolbox of things that I like doing. Box breathing is an easy one to have, and it's one of my favorite things to teach my clients. And it's just so easy. And it's there with you. So box breathing.
I love that it's there with you at all times. 100%. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Well, Siria, thank you so much for coming to Cafe con Pam. Your story is awesome. Thank you for sharing all the things.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Thank you for coming.
Stay shining. Sabrosura pa ti que que.
All right, listeners, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Cydia. I had a lot of fun. She is a lot of fun. I am curious to know what you learned from it. One reminder that I got from our conversation was to remember to stand in our power. We all have agency and power. And with that comes asking ourselves, what do we want to do?
Maybe that's the question that I leave you with. And I would love for you to tag me, screenshot, tag, tell me what resonated from this episode. I know. And I feel bad for my guests because I've not been promoting. And so if you've noticed that I've not shared much on the podcast, is because I moved. And as you can see, I'm in a different space. It's not quite finished yet. And for those of you who can see it, it's because you're watching this on YouTube. For those of you who are listening, I moved. And I'm in a different space. And the move, it started 2 weeks ago, which is when I stopped sharing on social. I was sharing on stories pretty frequently, and now I have kind of like burned out from it. But I was sharing on stories. I wasn't sharing on feed. And it's been like 4 weeks. Ouch. I mean, that's the reality of owning your own business and the intricacies of handling various things, because I don't have support at the moment when it comes to social media. And so, of course, because it's not a priority to move the business forward, it is what it is. It's not a priority to move the business forward. It kind of like falls to the bottom of the priority list. And so I guess this is my PSA on the fact that I'm aware that I've not shared or promoted episodes. And despite that, I'm so glad you're still listening. And so this is where I invite you to subscribe, because Apple Podcasts did a change recently. And that changed, basically, if you were not following my, or any podcast for that matter, if you're not following the podcast, it doesn't count as a listener. So it's kind of like a weird type of like metric. And so for us, as we are in conversations with potential sponsors and we are pitching people to work with, they look for the downloads. And so if you listen to Café con Pam, please do follow on Apple Podcast and also on Spotify, which are the two biggest platforms that our listeners use, and it makes a difference. Now, I say this because somebody once replied when I said this, and they were like, I just don't want all the downloads, all the episodes downloaded on my phone. So there is a setting on your phone, if you're on Apple Podcast specifically, there's a setting that allows you to, basically you toggle off the download, the automatic download. So all it does is, as you are following the show, all it does is you are able to see when the new episode has dropped, and then you decide to listen. Because now the thing is that Apple Podcast has been around for a long time, and podcasting, back when you had to download the episodes, now you don't have to, you can stream it. And so there's a setting on your phone, if you're on Apple Podcast, that might, I don't know now phones how they've changed, but it used to be automatic, that you, your podcast would download automatically, and then your bandwidth, your memory would just like be full in a day. And so if you don't want to do that, which I don't recommend you doing that, because you don't need to download the episode, you can just stream it. Then, unless you're going to be in a place where you don't have internet, but the majority of times you can just stream the podcast and just go to your settings, go to the download option, and see if you can toggle that off. That way you don't get, your memory bank doesn't get bugged down. So thank you. If you're still here, thank you, listeners, for still being here. I am so grateful you are still here. I can't believe we're at episode 355. And next week, I'm going to be sharing more about my move, because basically that apartment where I used to live was the place that held me throughout all the ups and downs of Café con Pam until now. And it's going to be a fun, kind of like memory lane perhaps type of short episode. I'm trying not to make my solo episodes super long. You seem to like those. And so also do let me know, you know, if you want me to talk longer. I always think that you may not want to listen to me, only me, for like a full hour, which maybe it's in my head. So yeah, next week we'll be sharing more about that move and how I'm transitioning and this new place, this new casita has provided a different type of holding for me, a different type of expansion. And it's really fun to be in it and allow myself to be in it and not rush through things, which is very much what we talked about during this episode, is, you know, allow yourself to be. And so I'm doing that. You wanna, listeners, let's stay connected at Café Con Pam Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, on the YouTube, of course, Café Con Pam website, cafeconpam.com. Check us out. We are now working on another offer. So we have the Manny's Pass where you can join us. We are in like a beautiful community. I'm careful about using the word community, but this has really become a true community. The Manny's that have joined, it's super fun. And so this is an online space where we gather and we get things done. I don't do a lot of hand holding because I want you to be self-sufficient, but we do have monthly tapping circles. We do have weekly office hours where I show up and then support you in whichever way you can and whatever way I can, actually. And it's a really fun space. The other thing that I'm working on is a Café Con Pam Mercadito. And this is a place for you, small business owners, to share your thing. Because as I am and have been in the world of podcasting for a minute, I've existed as a podcaster independent. I've joined a network. I'm back to being independent. I know a little bit closer how challenging it is for podcast advertising, and not only for podcasters to receive advertisers, but also for businesses to get on podcasts, because unfortunately, the podcasting world has evolved to be very much like radio and TV. And so we want to do it different. And we want to expand the opportunity for small business owners at a much more affordable price than any other podcaster or podcast network or ad agency would allow you to advertise. Because I think it's important for you to share yourself and expand into a new audience. So we are finalizing the nitty gritty details. We're very close to announcing it, but I want you to have this on your radar. If you are thinking about spending your marketing dollars, perhaps consider using the Mercadito that is coming up and we'll be sharing very soon. As a small business, it's recommended for you to spend 3-5% on marketing of your revenue. And so consider what is your annual income as a small business, and then what is the 3-5% to spend on marketing. And of course, this varies on the profitability of your business. It varies on the overhead. It varies on so many things. But that's kind of like a general idea for you to start thinking about. Because it may be that you join the Mercadito. It may be that you go somewhere else. Or you're like, you know what? I actually do have money for ads. Or I actually could work with an influencer. So that could be something for you to think about. Okay, listeners. Thank you so, so much for being here today. I'm so grateful you are still here. Y como siempre, stay shining. Sabrosura pa' ti que quede.